The Curbsiders Teach podcast is for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. And the topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any diseases or conditions. Furthermore, the views and statements expressed on this podcast are solely those of the speakers and should not be interpreted to reflect the official policy or position of any entity. You should always do your homework and give us any feedback.
Welcome back to the Curbsiders Teach Season 5, our series on health professions education. I'm Dr. Molly Poitline, joined by my co-host, Dr. Ira Krishnauskaya. On today's episode, we discuss goals and objectives with Dr. Noriko Anderson. But before we get started with that, Ira, will you remind the audience what we do on this show?
Of course, Molly. We are the health professions podcast for all things education. We use expert interviews to bring you teaching pearls and practice-changing knowledge to inspire the next generation of clinician educators. We have a fantastic conversation with our guest, Dr. Anderson. We highlight the pearls, the cake, the imagery, the fun, really, of constructing amazing goals and objectives.
You'll get to dive deep into Bloom's and Miller's.
All the things.
All the frameworks. So Dr. Noriko Anderson, MD, MPH, completed her undergraduate degree at Stanford. She went to UCLA to complete her Master's of Public Health, and medical school was at UCSF. She completed her internship at Alameda Health and a neurology residency at UC Irvine. She then completed a neuromuscular fellowship at UCSF. Clinically, Dr. Anderson is an adult general neurologist with a focus on neuromuscular medicine, and she is the assistant director of the Brachial Neuritis Clinic at UCSF Interprofessional Center. Dr. Anderson is also a Bridges coach and a co-director of the Physician Identity Weeks in the undergraduate medical education at UCSF.
We're excited to bring you this season of Curbsiders Teach with the support of and in partnership with the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine. A reminder that most episodes are available for CME credit through VCU Health CE for all health professionals at thecurbsiders.vcuhealth.org. Thank you to all our Patreon members. If you love the Curbsiders family content and you haven't joined yet, please consider supporting us and continuing to provide and create this amazing resource. So,
without further ado,
let's get to it.
Well, Dr. Anderson, thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited to sit down with you today and chat about goals and objectives. So if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe something from outside of medicine.
Sure. I'll start with my one-liner that you said. So I put, I'm a 41-year-old woman, wife, mother, Christian, neurologist, clinician, educator who loves to read, eat sweets in moderation, and I love to spend time with my family playing games. We're pretty competitive.
Ooh, that definitely resonates with me, Noriko. I should clarify, is it okay if we call you Noriko, Dr. Anderson?
Of course. Please.
Okay. Awesome. Do you have a favorite game that y'all play?
We went through a phase of playing this game called Killer Bunnies. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's quite complex, mostly during the pandemic. I think we played it to death, actually. We normally play dominoes or sometimes Uno or card games, and we really like gestures or charades where you have to act out and Taboo. I guess I'm listing 100 different games.
All the games.
We enjoy Taboo. And I also play Heads Up. That's usually one of our
go-tos
is Heads Up.
Nice. Especially good because you can do that. You can play that anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I have the app on my phone and we get really into it. So we have to establish the rules ahead of time. So everyone's on the same page.
Were you telling me that you Cahoots was one of your favorites? Was that what you told
no,
me?
Cahoots is the game that the two of the amazing presenters at AIM did, but Cranium is my go-to.
Oh, Cranium.
Yeah, okay. Like obsessed. Okay. Like played so much Cranium in college that at some point I was like, I think I have a Cranium use disorder. Like I need to take a it was mild, don't worry, that I had to take a break from it. But, you know, things are better now.
Well, Noriko, is there a book that you have read recently that you really enjoyed? Or if you want to go big and share a book that you feel like you would recommend to all healthcare professionals?
When I read, I usually read fiction. Mm. And they're very cheesy, happy-go-lucky books because I want to enjoy the books. I read Fourth Wing in that series by Rebecca Yarros, which I thought was pretty good. So it's romanticy. Yeah. Fantasy and romance
love it,
together.
Love it.
You know there's two more books after Fourth Wing, right?
I know. I've read those two. So.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, we won't make this a book club discussion, but I may or may not also be obsessed with those books. So.
Oh, well, I have lots of books that are good like that. So if you need recommendations, I have some.
Love it.
I might have to put that on my list. Yes, I need something relaxing at night to.
oh, it might rev you up
the day away. Okay. Well, maybe in a different way than clinic does, though.
Yeah. 100% different way. Nuriko, do you have a favorite failure that you would like to share, or something that you kind of learned? And
what a way to word that question. I wouldn't call it favorite, but memorable, and something I use is in medical school. I had my first child, so I was pregnant the beginning of first year, and then had my daughter the beginning of second year, so in August. And while she was under 6 months and not sleeping well, I was still in school. I didn't stop medical school. I continued, and I was studying, I was doing the classwork, watching her, and studying for step one really hard. I was putting in a lot of work, and I did not pass the test on my first take, just by like a few points, and I was totally devastated. I'd worked so hard, I'd been juggling lots of things, and I felt completely like a failure, like I couldn't do it all. And as part of the retake process and the studying, we meet with the learning specialist. And I remember to this day what she said. She told me, it's okay to take a nap. And I said, oh, wow, that's so basic, but it's the larger principle at play, right? It's saying it's okay to prioritize myself and making that a priority so I can do all the things that I wanted to do. So I had felt guilty about taking a nap, or like I couldn't, because I was like, every time I need to study or do this, but I wasn't retaining any of the information. So it was almost like it was wasted. And after that, I did take naps, and I was able to retain a lot more, and I felt rested, and I could do what I needed to do. And I passed the tests the second time and didn't have any trouble passing any of my tests after that. And I like to use that as an example for my students, because holding with failure is really tough, and being top of the class, getting straight A's, and then coming to medical school and wanting to do multiple things, like live your life, have kids, and still do well, can be a challenge. But knowing that you can prioritize yourself is really helpful. And so I share that with my students. At first, it was hard to still tell people about, but I'm not ashamed of it anymore. I do think it's a great learning, and I guess it is my favorite failure to talk about, because it shows that you can still be a wonderful, dedicated, successful physician having not passed a test, and like one test doesn't define you. So one failure doesn't make you a failure, and helping you to prioritize the multiple competing factors that you have as a physician or a medical student can be really helpful.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it is so powerful to hear things that have been challenging for other people. And, you know, it certainly is, many of us in medicine are very type A. And so to like feel comfortable admitting that that happened to you and sharing that what you learned from it is huge. And I do women's health. And so I work with a lot of moms who are just so stretched thin, and being a working mom of young kids is exhausting. And people are like, I don't know why I'm tired. And I'm like, you're tired because you have two jobs and little kids, and you're trying to take care of your home and your parents. And, you know, it's just like many, many things can pile up on people. And it sounds like you had a very good coach who was able to see that and remind you to prioritize yourself.
And a learning specialist, like to have both those things come together, you know, to say like, Nuriko, you got this. There are skills you have in your back pocket. Like this will, you know, you will get through this.
Yeah. The school is very supportive, and I appreciated that. At the time when I went here, we didn't have coaches. So it was me on my own, but the support that they gave was great. And I had another kid, fourth year. So being able to do that and still complete, and I did my 4 years. I didn't take time off. I just continued through, and they helped me do that. And I was very appreciative of that.
That's amazing. Well, and to go right into residency and taking care of the little ones is a lot to take on. You have thrived and survived, and we're excited to learn from you today. Before we get into that, Ira, do you have a pick of the week you want to share?
I do. It's kind of like a strange one in the sense that we've talked a little bit about in the past how I'm obsessed with the Peloton app. And on the Peloton app, there are various meditations. Like, you don't have to have a Peloton necessarily to use the Peloton app. There's a lot of things on there that are, you know, very like on your own can be done. And one of the things I love about them is their meditation. And my favorite person who leads the meditations, Chelsea Jackson Roberts, I'm probably butchering her name, so I apologize, but she played this amazing song called Hymn of Healing by, I guess, a group called Beautiful Chorus. I'm not actually sure like if that's the like audio tuner person or who that is, but it's this hymn that basically repeats the same mantra over and over again, which is that I am a radiant being of light and healing. I feel peace. I am safe. I heal from a whole place. And like, it feels like it would be very long and would be like impossible to repeat, but I have listened to this meditation so many times that I can just like listen to this song and almost like like you feel like the mantra is like in you. And so if anyone is, I don't know, looking for a meditation recommendation, they're very short. They're 5 to 10 minutes. And this one that has the song that's on Hymn of Healing, or called Hymn of Healing by Beautiful Chorus, is just, yeah, I mean, it's like a spiritual experience essentially, where you kind of hear this woman or this chorus singing, and it's, very calming, very grounding. And, you know, definitely something after, Molly, you read Onyx Storm or any of those books that Enrico is recommending and you need to like calm yourself back down, I would recommend one of these meditations. But on that note, Molly, do you have a pick of the week?
Well, thank you for sharing that one, Ira. And just to disclaimer, we are still not yet sponsored by Peloton, but we are willing to take your money. and I think that is a much better mantra than I like my job. I like my job. I'm glad you found a new one here.
That's an occasional comment. Don't worry. It's I love my job. I love my
job. Oh, I'm sorry. I love my job. I'll recommend a book since we were talking about good books before. It's maybe not quite totally in the fun, like cheerful vein, but it's called All Fours by Miranda July. It is about a woman who, have you read it, Ira?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I have actually audibled it. It's intense.
I loved it. It was intense. It's about this woman who's kind of going through a midlife crisis, perimenopause, and just the narrator's, it's narrated, I believe, in the first person, but like you feel like you're this woman who is going through all this, and just her struggle with mental illness and anxiety and like not quite being totally tethered to the world, but also managing to go through and be a successful mom and like creating art. And I don't want to give too much away, but it's just a really bizarre and interesting story. And I really enjoyed it.
And the author is also like a big deal in Hollywood, too. So I think she's written and I think even produced a lot of like TV shows, movies that we, you know, that are like very popular and mainstream. And this is like her kind of writing about what doesn't sound like exactly like her 100% like true. Yeah, exactly. Experience. Yeah. But I think she said that she did pull on things that happened to her. So it's a really it's an interesting read for sure.
Yeah. Intense is a good description.
Yeah.
Well, great. Let's get into the topic. We like to start with a case from our fictional hospital, Cashlock Memorial. We have Leslie. She is an early career faculty who was asked by her department chair to teach a few sessions in the health professions education track related to reflective practice and culturally responsive healthcare. Leslie had previously taught a short didactic on both of these topics, but is wondering where to turn when thinking about longer and multiple sessions. So to take a step back, Noriko, you've created and or implemented many curricula in your time. Can you share what made you passionate about developing curricula and specifically getting down to the nitty gritty of goals and objectives?
Yeah, I think it's an honor and a privilege to be able to help form future physicians. And that's basically what I'm doing when I'm doing the work here at the School of Medicine. And that perspective makes me passionate about my work because it seems impactful and really inspiring to me. And curriculum can sound pretty boring, but when you think of it in that light, it's like, wow, this is awesome. Yeah. And so goals and objectives help pave the way for curriculum development. They're kind of the backbone or infrastructure for it. And it helps you have a structured, measurable way that's also iterative, where you can go back and improve. That's really helpful and I think quite beautiful.
My gosh, I love that, Enrico. I feel like that's maybe the first time the goals and objectives have been described as beautiful or even the curriculum development process. So that definitely warmed my heart. I appreciate hearing that from you. And you're totally right. I feel like creating goals and objectives isn't exactly like the sexiest, most exciting topic in the health professions world, education world especially. But just wondering, you know, this is a chance for us to have an episode about that. So if you can kind of break it down for us, how do you think about goals and objectives? How do you define each of them? Kind of where do we start?
Yeah, I think really you can think of goals as your dreams, right? They're the pie in the sky, what you wish would happen, the end result or achievement that takes place in the perfect world where the learners get this end product or achievement or result or aim based on the material and how it was taught. So that's like the perfect ideal, which doesn't often happen. That's what we want, but it takes a lot more things to get it done. So that's the ideal. And I like to start there as the goal. And like I said, if you think of it as your dreams or what your hopes are, it has a different perspective. It starts to become boring when we say, make it objective, right? But it's really a process that is looking at your hopes and goals and dreams for something and making that more tangible. And the objectives are that piece. They're the more tangible, specific, measurable, smaller steps that help you get to the goal. And I think of them kind of like stairs, and you start kind of at the base and the most simplest, and then you can work your way up and look at the process and what it takes to get to the goal, and then make each little step as the objective.
Well, I love that you framed it so positively, because I'm hoping you will change my relationship with goals and objectives. But I think you're off to a great start with that. In kind of thinking concretely for Leslie here, so she's trying to create her goal, which is her dream, her overall picture of what she's trying to achieve with we're creating this educational track on reflective practice and culturally responsive healthcare. Do you have any, I know this isn't like your specific topic necessarily, but do you have any kind of tips for Leslie about how she would create that overall goal, like how she might frame that specifically?
Yeah, I think it's important to ask, like, what is your ideal aim? Like, what is the outcome or the result that you want from this? So the hope that you hope to achieve. And then looking at the perspective of kind of the learners, is this a need? Has this been something that they're lacking or something they voiced that they wanted? Looking at leadership and what their goals are, expectations, and also kind of the overall curriculum and how that factors in. And you want to have some type of mutual alignment with that. So what Leslie is hoping for, but also what's already out there, what's expected, and where the need is, and having the aim align with those. Because it's not really helpful if you only take what you want, especially if it's a learning environment. It has to be more collaborative. And so it's looking at all those things and finding a happy place of communion.
Oh my gosh, this is the most like community-oriented version and most beautiful version of goals and objectives, which is really, again, warming my heart. I wonder, Nuko, if the goal, if let's say Leslie says like her goal is that learners will kind of get a better understanding of the basics of reflective practice, especially as it contributes to, let's say, professional identity formation and being a clinician that's participating in culturally responsive healthcare, let's say. How do we then jump to those stairs that you were talking about with the objectives? And Molly has already identified her love, you know, love-hate relationship. I also have a love-hate relationship with objectives, though it might be a little bit stronger on the love, a little bit less on the hate. But I do have like sometimes, you know, a challenging time creating those steps. And so I wonder if you were advising Leslie or Molly and myself on how to really construct them, where would we start?
Yeah. So the goal is the beginning and the ending, right? It's what you start with and where you want to end up. And the pathway between that is the pathway between that is the objectives, right? So looking at the objectives, you want to think about how, if I had this goal, how could I break it down into different pieces? So we want to do reflective practice. What does that mean? Do people understand what that means? Are they aware of it? Because maybe the starting point is defining what that is so people will understand. So an objective could be about that, a learning objective where they understand or define what reflective practice is. Mm-hmm. And then another could be, how is that implemented? So you really want to break it down into the steps of, if I didn't know anything about this and I wanted to get to this endpoint, what do I have to do in between there? And how could these be, the objectives have to be tangible. They have to be achievable. I'm not going to say like in 30 seconds, you're going to have this full wide breadth of understanding about reflective practice. It has to mm-hmm. be something that makes sense. And so you're looking at breaking it down into like, is this knowledge based? Is this action based, like a behavior I want the learners to learn and achieve? And implementing this relationship-centered and culturally responsive care, what does that actually mean? What does that entail? Mm-hmm. How can they do that? And then the objectives should fall within those.
And I guess when educators are like painstakingly creating these objectives, and thank you, Noriko, for kind of walking us through what that would look like. And we'll, you know, dive even deeper into the hot topic of creating objectives. But how would, and that's kind of how educators create them, but how do learners use objectives? Like, where does that kind of fit in when we as educators are maybe thinking about creating the objectives themselves?
That's a great question. I think for the learner, it's about clarity. So understanding, what is the purpose of this material? Like, what am I supposed to take away from this? And then did I take away from it what it set out to share with me? So for progress and understanding, I think the learners can use objectives to orient themselves to what the session should be about, and using it kind of like a thermometer to understand, am I at this point where I, you know, feel like I've achieved this or not, or did this not align with the material? So maybe the objective is off, and that information is really helpful, right? Because that's how we can improve things and see, because sometimes what we think is coming through and what is being conveyed isn't. And so having that feedback is really helpful. So I think for the learner, it's a point of clarity. It's a point of measuring progress and understanding, and maybe even implementation sometime, depending on what the objective is and knowing if that was achieved or not.
And you talked about the objectives kind of being this staircase or ladder, sort of starting at the basic and rising up. And I think that's a perfect segue into Bloom's taxonomy. Could you kind of help define that for us and tell us a little bit about how to use that as an educator?
Yes. So Bloom's taxonomy is a hierarchical model, like the stairs or a pyramid base, that categorizes goals and objectives. And it gives us a common language and a common framework to use about objectives. So they start at the really basic, like remembering, building that to understanding, then applying, analyzing, evaluating, and creating. And that is a really helpful way to think about your objectives and where you fit along that pyramid. And so people can use that as a reference and a guide. And the Bloom's taxonomy for each section, they have verbs that help you. So whenever I make objectives, I like them to start with verbs, right? I think that's the tradition we use. And so each category will have a bunch of verbs that you can use that help you start. Sometimes it's really hard to formulate these objectives and to put into a simple phrase or a clear language what you want to accomplish, and having those categories and levels with the verbs makes it really helpful to have a starting point so that people can look, say, yes, this is what I want. I want to define what culturally humble care is, relationship-centered care, so that you have a starting point. So it's a great framework and starting point for people to create objectives.
Thank you, Noriko. I feel like, you know, no topic or no podcast or lecture or whatever it is, educational material would be complete without at least mentioning Bloom's once. So now that we've checked that box, the Bloom's bingo can continue. I guess, how do you kind of think about the different types of objectives? Because I know that you had mentioned some of them already earlier, thinking about behavioral, kind of learner cognitive process. How do we make sense of all these different versions of an objective?
So a lot of times in academia, we make special words for simple things, right? We have a phrase or a category for it when the basic principle is known already, but it sounds very academic by saying these titles like learner cognitive, right? So I hear that. But when I think about the objectives, I think about different flavors of cakes for different occasions, right? You can have a confetti cake for a birthday or red velvet for a Valentine's Day celebration. Mm. And those make sense. And this is what the different types of objectives are too. So learner cognitive, I'm focusing on intellectual skills and knowledge for the learner. So that's, do you know this? So understanding the pathophysiology of diabetes, something like that. Or learner effective, this is targeting attitudes, values, feelings, and emotions of the learners, like developing a compassionate attitude toward patients with chronic pain. Or behavioral kind of is more, speaks for itself, where you're looking at a specific action or a behavior you want the learners to perform as a result of the learning process. So performing the cardiac exam and making sure they have all the components of that exam and can perform it effectively. And then there are other things like process objectives, where you're looking at methods or procedures and how they achieve a desired outcome. So it might be implementing a standardized checklist for surgical safety, something like that. Patient-related objectives where they're centered around outcomes or improvement in health and well-being. So improving patient adherence to medication regimen, something like that. So these are all, when we think about objectives and think about the things we want for our learners, really basic and simple things, but sometimes hard to express or categorize. And they sound fancy and academic when we put these titles on them. But if you think of them, just like I said, the specific flavors or the desired dessert for this occasion, you're matching the objective to the need or the goal that you're setting up for.
I love that, Noriko. Ira and I just came home from the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine Conference, and we had quite a few discussions about if we should try to make an episode about someone who thinks learner theories and like all these fancy sounding words are really important versus somebody who's just more practical. And I tend to be more on the practical side. So thank you for bringing it down to the level of cake flavors. I appreciate that.
And that's an amazing analogy. I was sitting there being like, oh my gosh, another food analogy. Molly always thinks that I'm like constantly hungry and when I point these things out, but that was not me, you know, incepted. That was Noriko original. And that was an incredible way of thinking about it. I do wonder, Noriko, like, not to throw out another person's name, because we just talked about Bloom's and you gave us a beautiful breakdown on the types of objectives and kind of the cake analogy. How does Miller's pyramid fit into this whole conversation? And how do you personally use it or not, you know, when you're creating objectives?
Yeah. So Miller's pyramid is a framework for evaluating students' competencies, specifically in healthcare settings. So in medical school, these are things that we use. And it has the different stages of learning for the students that they go through. So learning just knowledge. So what the student knows, and then knows how, and then shows, and then does. And I think we use this as a medical adage anyway, like see one, do one, teach one. It's kind of the same thing. Or like with our Pisces students, we do these evaluations and they rhyme, where you're like the reporter, the interpreter, the manager, and then the like evaluator, I think, is the last one. I might have got the E wrong.
That or educator.
Educator, I think it's either one. But you're showing this mastery of the material so much that it's not kind of just the basic of knowing it, but applying it, implementing it, and being able to share with others and teach. And that's basically what Miller's Pyramid is. And I think this is helpful because it gives you a stages of development. And so that's a framework you can use to guide your material and your objectives, because we're not going to be having the same objectives for fourth year medical students as first year, right? Because their stage of development is different. And so you can use that framework to help you go along the progression. I think that's really great. And it's supposed to be competency-based, right? And that is a strong theme in medical education. And so most of the time when we're doing evaluations or doing them based on the ACGME or the, maybe that's for graduate medical education, but the required graduation components, it follows this progression of the learner over time, which is a natural progression and so is helpful to have.
Well, I think you've done a nice job inspiring Leslie to be enthusiastic about goals and kind of think about that broad overarching, what's her dream of what she's hoping to get out of this curricula, and how also being mindful of how that fits in with the overall training that her learners are undergoing. How would she kind of, you gave us some really nice frameworks and some tips about thinking about the objectives, but how would she really choose which type of objective to go for? And then how would that actually guide her curriculum development?
Great question. First, I would say congratulations to Leslie for stepping out there and asking for the session to be done or to be able to do it, since it seems like it's something she's passionate about. I would want to hear from her about her desired goals and outcomes. So I know she said she wanted to teach on this topic, but what's the why, or why is it important, or what does she think is helpful about it, or why would it be helpful for other learners to know about it, which I think can help us understand more of her goal and maybe some of her objectives. And then from there, I would say it would be helpful to understand how she would see this being successful, or what would make this seem successful in her view. Mm-hmm. And then I would also ask how this fits in with the rest of the curriculum, or what the learners already have access to understand, because we don't really create things in a vacuum. They need to be cohesive and build upon what is already existing in the curriculum. So I would probably ask a lot of questions to understand and to get more details, because if there is already teaching and didactic on this topic, then of course we are not going to start from scratch. We're going to build upon that. And so having the responses to those questions would be helpful, and I think helps target Leslie's material and goals and objectives, because we have to put it into context of those things.
And not to make it personal, Noriko, but if Leslie was on your kind of Physician Identity Week's committee, and she was responsible for, let's say, the reflective practice component of, I know this example was relative to kind of the health professions track, but let's say she was on your kind of course committee and is trying to make a reflective practice kind of longitudinal curriculum, are there things that you are advising her on, like specifically maybe starting with more kind of effective objectives or behavioral objectives? Or are you kind of saying, like, you know, Leslie, let's just think about what all the things are that are being taught in the School of Medicine, big picture, start with our dream, our goal, and then dive in? Like, how would you be advising her?
That's a good question. I probably wouldn't start with the big, because that can be so overwhelming. I would probably start with her session and seeing what her objectives are or goal is and the objectives that she comes up with, but also looking at what exists already in the curriculum, because if her objective is already achieved somewhere else in another part, then we don't want to repeat that unless there's some value in repetition or building on that in some other way. And I would want to understand like you said, if it's a knowledge base objective or her goal, and the place to get to her goal is it, there's a lack of knowledge about this, and so maybe the objectives will be about that, or is it changing learners' attitudes about it, so that, because that will frame what you do and what your objective is. So I would like to hear from her, but then also put that into the context of what already exists. So if it's almost easy if nothing exists about it, right? Because then you can start from the bottom and work your way up, like Bloom's taxonomy, or start from knowledge base. But if there's items already in the curriculum, then you have to look at what that entails and see if it already achieves one of the goals or one of the objectives that you have, and how can you build from that? So I would say, Leslie, what is your kind of outcome that you want? And then I would ask, like, what do you need to get there? What exists already that may help with these stepping stones, and see what exists? So it's a little bit hard to say in like theoretical, because some of the information we need isn't in my prompt question. Mm. But I think it's important to ask those things and reflect. So sometimes we are creating things in a vacuum because it's just our wish and our dream. And we're like, oh, I see this. This is so important. But then you have to look and see, like, well, what's already done? And where am I starting from scratch, or am I building upon something that already exists? And then certain things are easier than others, right? Increasing knowledge, because you're basically just teaching material, is easy. But changing attitude, changing behaviors, those are more challenging. And so creating objectives and materials that help to do that are kind of a different flavor than just knowledge base. So that can change things.
Great. Well, do you think we have anything else to talk about with this case, or should we move on to the next one?
I would say next one, unless Noriko, yeah, you want to drop some pearls that we hadn't said yet about some cake pearls. I don't even know, boba pearls. I'll try and make this food related.
No, that was the end of my food analogies.
Yeah.
Well, we have our second case. We have Anton, and he's created an educational series for second-year neurology residents around situational awareness during code strokes. He comes to you looking for edits or comments on his session goals and objectives, and less so on feedback on the instructional strategies. He has one goal: neurology residents will recognize situational awareness, and one objective: list components of situational awareness. How would you start this conversation? And he comes to you as a trusted mentor. You guys have a good relationship, and he's really excited to get your feedback on how he can improve.
I'd say thank you, Anton, for meeting with me. I love neurology, and I like this project because stroke codes are near and dear to, I think, every neurologist's heart, because we have to go through that in training. And I, again, ask questions and want to hear from the creator about their ideas and desires and hopes, because that's us talking about the ultimate goal. So he has a goal and he has one objective. They're pretty simple, right? Neurology residents will recognize situational awareness. So I would probably tease out a little bit more why he chose situational awareness, like hearing maybe his personal narrative about it, or why he thinks it's important, because that will help me to gather more information about what the ultimate goal is. Because I don't think recognizing situational awareness is probably the ultimate goal that he is looking for. And so asking more questions to hear his perspective about why is this important? How does this impact patients, or how does this impact the residents or other team members, like interprofessional team members, to understand his passion about this and why he's creating the educational session. And it's for second year neurology residents too, right? So the PGY 1 year is internal medicine. And I'm wondering if there's some particular reason that he chose second year based on that, their experience as an intern and now as a neurology resident, does that factor in? So I would definitely ask more questions about his desire for this session and why he chose it. And I think it's easier for people to talk about things when it's not formalized into what's your goal or what's your objective, but tell me why you're interested in this or why is this important, and hearing more of their story and their passion about it, because that can get down more so to the nitty gritty of what the goal is when it's taken in that context.
I like that, taking it back to the why. I think that really does help us stay grounded and stay focused on the bigger picture. Just to play devil's advocate, say Anton says, you know, I've actually already created this amazing session and I'm kind of just backtracking and making my goals and objectives after the fact. Not to say that I've ever done that, but how would you kind of help him sort of maybe see how he might be able to do a better job if he actually starts with the goals and objectives first?
Yeah, I think that's a common practice, or a real practice, where people create something and then you're like, oh, what are my objectives and goals? My goal and objective at the end. When really the goals and objectives are the starting point and the ending, right? Because you want to see, I want this outcome. How do I get there? And then that helps you to put the objectives. So I wouldn't want to downplay any of the work that Anton has done. I'm sure Anton has put in a lot of effort, hopefully, on this project. So I would start with some, you know, positive reinforcement. And then what I find is when you want to evaluate the effectiveness of something, understanding what your goal and objectives are important. So I would look at the material he has, and then I would say, you know, how would we evaluate this? And often that becomes a harder question if you haven't created the objectives and goals, because you don't know what to evaluate. And so I would say it would be helpful for us to go back and see what your ultimate goal is and how you achieve those goals by, you know, enumerating some specific objectives. And that will guide you to make sure that your material is accomplishing that, or hoping as best you can to accomplish that. And then you would use that to be able to assess and evaluate the material.
Thanks, Noriko. We're a podcast that loves practical tips. So having, you know, real world situations where, Molly, you're not alone. Many of us have done that type of approach too. So I think hearing kind of the benefits of the standard approach and kind of what we've done traditionally, I think is super helpful. And I guess, Noriko, for Anton specifically, like, besides kind of taking him through the journey of his, you know, goal creation and like what's beneath that, and that perhaps maybe he actually wants more of a stroke code kind of focused objective, and, you know, where the developmental level fits in. Do you have any edits or thoughts to him for the objective specifically? Like, would you name it like, oh, Anton, I see you've made a learner cognitive objective, or like, how would you go about kind of the maybe conversation around feedback related to that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, so it's hard to say the language I would use, because this list, the components of situational awareness, sounds a little bit basic, like right at the beginning of the kind of learning pyramid. And so I think sometimes it's helpful to actually look at the Bloom's taxonomy or Miller's pyramid and see, like, where does this objective fit? So showing him these and asking, like, where do you think your objective fits? And is that getting to your purpose, or are there other steps that need to be taken to reach your goal? So what other objectives might you need? Sometimes it's hard for people to make those. And I think it is also helpful to look at the larger curriculum objectives and to see where your session or your material fits. And that can be a starting point. And listing out those can be helpful. So if this was a interprofessional themed goal, so looking at situational awareness during stroke codes, because during that you're in the ER, right? And there are lots of team members, a nurse, an ER physician, CT techs, all kinds of things, all kinds of people going on. And so is it an interprofessional goal? Are we looking at that? Or what is the actual area we're trying to impact or build knowledge and skills in. And so I would ask that because that can make you have a larger perspective, right? Seeing what your institutional goals or the goals for this part of the curriculum, what they are, but then also looking at Bloom's taxonomy or Miller's pyramid and saying like, okay, these are second year students. What skills do you think that they should have, or what knowledge base do you think that they should have at this point? And what kind of objective would that be? So I think looking at the framework can also give you ideas or material that you can use to, I would say, to beef up your objective or goal, because it gives you a framework. And sometimes these are like really nebulous topics and you're just like, I just want them to learn this. But looking at the framework helps you to make it kind of methodical and make it clear and give it a common language that all educators use, which can make it helpful for comparing to other material that's been published or looking at things that's already a standard of care, and it can be very helpful. So I probably would, you know, pull out my diagram and say, Anton, where do you feel like your objective and goals meet here? And for the second year students, where do you think they should be? And are we at the same place, or are there other things we need to think about and consider to get them to that place?
And that sounds like some great resources already, thinking about what's occurring locally in the broader curriculum in which he's working, and then also going back to some of those frameworks, Bloom's taxonomy and Miller's pyramid. Are there other resources that you might point Anton to, or things that were really helpful for you when you were getting learning expertise around this? Other things that you would recommend educators reach for?
Yeah, I think it depends on the topic for the material, because I do like to look at examples of what exists already, what's been published, what did other medical schools do, or what did other people do, what was helpful and beneficial, or what did they think was not. And looking at that existing material helps me to decide if I want to redo some of what they did or do something else. So I think if he did some research about situational awareness, and that can be another context too, because it may not be for specific to stroke codes, but understanding what others have done on a similar topic can be really helpful. So sometimes doing a literature search can be helpful to help you model or reframe what your material is, so that your goals and objectives incorporate what has already been done and give you context. I think that that's helpful. So I might encourage him to do a literature search to see in other programs and other situations where situational awareness was used, what did they do and what were their goals? And does that align with what you want to do and how you want to do it to build from that point?
And Noriko, are you like pulling out, you know, Kern's six steps and being like, here, step three, goals and objectives, Anton, let's read together, you know, role play discovery around making goals, writing goals and writing objectives? Or does that not really factor into the conversation?
I think it depends, because I think it's always important to meet the person where they are and how ready they are to hear information. So it may be that he wants to take what I've said and go back and do it on his own and look. I don't want to be like pedantic and be like, here's the there. But I think it'd be like, oh, you know what's really helpful and what helps me? And I could talk about my process or what I do. And I do think visuals for me are helpful. And so I like the pyramid and the diagrams. And so I would definitely ask, oh, are you interested in seeing this? This is really helpful for me. What do you think? And seeing if he is, because if he's not, then I'm not going to force it on him. But I think that the information and the frameworks are really helpful, because it does give us that common language, the common starting points, and a pathway to making effective goals and objectives. So if he wants to see the pictures, I would show him.
Well, you know, I think some people learn really well by reading Kern's six steps. Some people learn really well with the diagrams. And I love, Noriko, that you're like, I'm going to figure out who's, you know, the learner in front of me and kind of tailor to that. I think relative to, you mentioned already kind of how the goals and objectives tie into assessment strategies, and wondering, are there any other pearls for Anton? Let's say he does kind of this iterative improvement or an editing of his goals and objectives. Are there other kind of tips you would give him to that for that process and or kind of the tying in with the assessment?
I would say it's always helpful to tap into other resources, people who are doing educational scholarship, because it can be helpful to hear their perspective about your work and get their pearls and insights. So I would say it's really helpful to talk with someone who does that, and also someone who focuses on assessment, because when you're creating things, if you're not taking into consideration how effective they will be or how you will measure how effective they will be, it's almost like it doesn't matter, right? The material is just out there, and that's not what you want ideally. You want your material, your session to have an impact. I think everybody who does curriculum work wants that material to matter. And so understanding if your material has an impact or is effective is really important. And so the goal and the objectives help frame that, right? Because that's the outcome you want. And now you have to see, did this achieve that outcome? And so it is helpful, I think, to talk to people who, you know, do regular evaluation and assessment work and have that breadth of knowledge about what type of assessment to do for certain types of material or evaluation is really helpful. So I would say, don't be afraid to ask for help and get your resources and pearls from other people who do this work, because they like it. They want to tell you, right? Because like I said, this can seem boring, but it's not. And collaborating with others can make it be helpful, because people are passionate about education. And even though this situational awareness session is just one piece of it, you know, it is one piece of a broader puzzle, and making sure that you are discussing and aligning with that broader overall picture is really helpful.
Thank you. These have been so helpful. And I think just a great overview of how to frame goals and objectives and how to get better at writing them. Before we go to take home points, or if you're ready to go to take home points, we could do that. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on? Something, any other new topics that you want to introduce that we haven't talked about yet?
No, I think we've been thorough about
that. Okay, great. Goals. Yeah. Well, we'd love to hear your take home points.
So I just want people to remember that goals and objectives are fun. There are frameworks out there to help you, and that the goals and objectives are essential to a methodical, organized, and intentional curriculum development. So objectives will set you up for your assessment and evaluation and make it a lot easier. It makes the process a lot easier when you know what you're looking for and hoping for, and you have a clear objective that you can use to structure the evaluation.
I love that, Noriko. You've like given us such a roadmap. It's amazing and made this both delicious and fun. So thank you for that. We want to give you a chance to plug anything that you're working on, a recent publication, an important resource, anything that you want to highlight for the listeners.
So one thing I would say is I'm the assistant director of the Brachial Neuritis Center at UCSF in neurology. It's a multidisciplinary clinic that sees patients with brachial neuritis, which is also neuralgic amyotrophia, the brachial plexus, or commonly used to be called Parsons-Turner syndrome. And it's actually a lot more common than previously thought. So more like 1 in 1,000. Compared to 1 in 100,000, which we thought before. So if you see a patient with acute onset shoulder pain followed by weakness and sensory change, think about this diagnosis and have them come see us.
Your team has taken care of one of my patients, so thank you.
Ooh, look at that clinical continuity. And yeah. It's the brachial neuritis clinic, you said? Amazing.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. I'm tempted to ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate our goals and objectives for this session?
Oh, well, that's a tough, right? I'm going to rate them high because this is our session. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that was so wonderful to sit down with Noriko. What kind of take-homes do you have?
Oh my gosh, Molly, so much. I mean, again, I'm just jazzed up, fired up. This is so fun. It just reminds me that goals and objectives can be really fun. And I do like the kind of imagery that she used, where it's both like the goals as the outcome, like your hopes, your dreams, and then the objectives being your steps and kind of getting to those hopes and dreams. So I think that when I talk to learners or other educators about kind of constructing this or constructing goals and objectives, I think that's the same imagery I'm going to really highlight for them.
Excellent. And I really liked her focus on the why and the bigger picture and really taking it back to like, what is my actual end goal to really ground this in the important work that we're trying to do as educators. So very helpful tips overall.
100%.
This has been another episode of our Curbsiders series, The Curbsiders Teach. Get your show notes at thecurbsiders.com/teach. A special thanks to the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine for making this season possible. And thanks to all of our team behind the scenes for helping with the script and show notes. Thanks to Dr. Matt Watto and Dr. Paul Williams for their support in this project. Thanks to the team at PodPace for editing and production support. Until next time, I've been Dr. Molly Hoyblein.
And we're committed to providing you with high-value, practice-changing knowledge. And to do that, we need your feedback. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts or contact us at thecurbsidersteach@gmail.com. A reminder that this and most episodes are available for CME credit for all healthcare professionals at curbsiders.vcuhealth.org. All you have to do is create an account. And I'm Dr. Ira Krishnovskaya. Thank you for joining us today and letting us bring you a little nugget of medical edutainment. Or a little piece of cake? I don't even know.